Welcome to Gospel Tangents, the best source for Mormon history, science, and theology. I'm Rick Bennett. When Mormon pioneers came to southern Idaho and northern Utah, they ate a lot of the deer and buffalo that Native Americans depended on for survival. It definitely changed Native American life, especially among the Shoshone tribes that were in that area. In our next conversation with Darren Perry, author of The Bear River Massacre, we'll talk about how Native American life changed. For one thing, Native Americans ignored fences that Mormons built around their cattle and found those to be a source of food, which definitely created tensions among the Indians and the Mormons. We'll talk more about that in our next conversation. And oh, by the way, if you want to see the whole video, sign up for just $8 a month, either to gospeltangents.com, click on the yellow subscribe button, or patreon.com/gospeltangents, or you can go to youtube.com/gospeltangents and see the entire interview. So you've got three ways to see that. Just make sure that I'm Facebook friends with you, and I'll add you to the group for just $8 a month, and you can see the entire interview. Now back to our conversation.
So the Shoshone were here for generations before 1847 when Brigham Young came.
Yeah.
And it seems like they were fairly friendly with the Mormon pioneers.
They were. In fact, Sagwitch and his band were here in the Cache Valley. There were quite a few different groups in the Cache Valley. Bear Hunter and his group was here. He was a Northwestern. Pocatello. Chief Pocatello was here, in and out of the area, spent most of his time over by the City of Rocks and the Raft River Mountains and very northwestern Utah, over past Snowville. So he was hanging out in that area. So, they were here for a long, long time, and that all changed. They wintered here. In fact, all the groups would come together in the winter months at the massacre site because of the hot springs. And so Sagwitch was probably over a group of 100, but Pocatello had 100, Bear Hunter had 100, Chief Sandpitch was a Northwestern, he had that many. So these groups would all come together. They all used Cache Valley as their home, but they would come together to winter. But I know Sagwitch was here when Peter Maughan got here. They were the first settlers sent by Brigham Young. Funny thing is, Peter Maughan comes in 1855. In 1854, Peter Maughan is in Tooele and having the crickets and grasshoppers eat everything they ever planted. He writes a letter to Brigham Young and says, "This is a crap hole. We don't want to be here anymore. Where else can we go?" And he ends up sending them. They just discovered the Cache Valley. And so he sends Peter Maughan and a group of about 20 up here. We know they got along, though, because Peter Maughan, we have letters from Peter Maughan to Brigham Young saying that Sagwitch and his band are the friendly ones. Always referred to Sagwitch as the friendly one. So friendly that there's a couple of mountain peaks and a basin up here named after Sagwitch by the pioneers. Hmm. So we know they had a good relationship. We know that Sagwitch helped the pioneers that first came to the valley. Those first pioneers came to the valley in late September to establish a community. Well, late September in Cache Valley, it's getting cold. And winter comes a little bit earlier here than anywhere else. And so, but he showed the pioneers what plants they could eat, where the roots were, and how they could really live, help them build lodges. Some of the lodges, those early pioneer lodges, were helped built by the Shoshone people too. So, but we know that. And so Peter Maughan always referred to Sagwitch as the friendly one, which tells me there were other groups up here that weren't near as friendly. Pocatello's band, and especially Bear Hunter's band, were really adversarial to the pioneers. They'd steal things as often as they could. They didn't want their presence here at all. I think Sagwitch had a little more inclusive demeanor. I think he probably knew it was inevitable, and it was better to try to get along than to fight it. So, but he was very good with the early pioneers, and so, yeah.
Interesting. Okay, so let's jump into, so just for frame of reference, September 11th, 1857 was the Mount Meadows Massacre. Okay. And so we've got a lot of violence going on here. And of course, that's in southern Utah. The Civil War begins in 1861, basically. Sure. And so tell us when the Bear River Massacre occurred.
The massacre happened on January 29th in 1863. So all those years from Peter Mott getting here in 55, those 8 years saw thousands of pioneers come to the valley. It saw the pioneers relocate all of their cattle herd to the Cache Valley. I think they had more than 4,000 head of cattle here at one point in those early years. And because of the grass and the water, there was so much natural feed for the animals that they were brought here. Well, that put a damper on a hunting-gathering lifestyle. You needed wild seeds and grasses. You needed the fish that were in the streams, and you needed the deer and elk and buffalo that may have been here. And I'm speaking about the bison now. But there were deer and elk and other things that were here that the Shoshones had lived on and had no problems ever finding a food source because it was such a rich environment. But now you have thousands of pioneers that are looking for the same food source. And the difference is the pioneers had an agricultural lifestyle. They knew how to plant crops. They knew how to do that. The Shoshones had no idea how to plant crops. They only knew how to hunt and gather. And so with the depletion of those resources, really was the big cause of the massacre. That, and now you introduce gold in California and Oregon. People from back east coming, the California Oregon trails cut through the very heart of the Shoshone land. And so now you're starting to have depredations and a few other things, but that's really the environment towards the Civil War, towards, 1863. I think the pioneers that were living here, and look, Brigham Young always had the mantra, it's easier to feed the Indians than to fight them. He said that many times from the pulpit. But he lived in the confines of Salt Lake. I mean, there weren't any bad things going to happen to him and his family in Salt Lake. But you take a family out here that's out in the middle of Mendon, perhaps, and there's not another pioneer family within a mile, and you have a cow or two, and you're trying to make it as a small family, and now the natives are taking your cattle or stealing or begging for food at your doorstep. That's a different thing. So to ask them, it's easier to feed them than to fight them. For the most part, they had a hard time feeding themselves and their families. So, it's not lost on me that why the saints that were here had a problem with the natives. They were out in the middle of nowhere, and they had a hard time living themselves. So I'll cut them a little bit of slack because, I'd want to take care of my family too. And I just don't think they had enough to take care of everybody. But that starts generating letters from saints here in the Cache Valley that end up to Salt Lake and then end up to a federal judge that, look, the Indians are causing problems. We're having a hard time feeding our own families. We can't feed them anymore. You got to come take care of the Indian problem. And so what were letters to probably Brigham Young ended up somehow to a federal judge in Salt Lake, who at the end of the day issued arrest warrants for the chiefs, Bear Hunter, Sagwitch, Sandpitch, and Pocatello. And so, but who's going to serve an arrest warrant? There was nobody back in the day. The only people that were here in the Cache Valley were the church leaders. They were usually the civic leaders too. Peter Mon, Henry Ballard, not the Henry Ballard, his great-great-grandfather, Henry Ballard. And so these guys are here in charge, and, they're not serving anymore. Lawrence. So that task went to Colonel Patrick Connor, who was ironically stationed just up the road at Camp Douglas at the University of Utah today. But and they were there. They shouldn't have been there. Patrick Connor and his California volunteers sign up to go fight in the Civil War in 1861 in California. That's what they thought they were going to do. They all signed ragtag group. They all had different rifles. I mean, but they wanted to go fight in the Civil War. And so they leave California halfway across Nevada. They get new orders. And the new orders were having a hard time protecting the overland mail route. You got to establish a fort in Salt Lake to protect that. But not only that, you need to keep an eye on the Mormons. The Mormons, we think, are going to secede from the Union. So this is coming from the United States government.
So this is from Lincoln.
Yeah. Lincoln says the Mormons moved to Mexico. They were worried that they might form an alliance. The Mormons might form an alliance with the Mexican people or the Native American people. But, you know, they were not in the United States. It wasn't the United States then. And they said, you're going to establish this camp in Salt Lake to keep an eye on, babysit the Mormons, basically. And Connor and his men reluctantly, I mean, what do? You go where you're told to go. So they established a camp, Camp Douglas, up on the hill. They were told to aim their cannons out over the valley to downtown Salt Lake to just intimidate. And look, the Mormons weren't causing trouble. So I'm sure it was a easy job, but they were bored. And they'd signed up to kill people and fight. And now they're babysitting the least violent group of people in the world. Well, you know, as you look at Mountain Meadows Massacre.
They might not say they're released.
Yeah. So I shouldn't have said that. So some groups anyway. But as a collective, they weren't that violent of a group. And so the fact that they're stuck there now watching babysitting was not what they'd signed up to do. Mm-hmm. So now they hear about Indian troubles 80 miles away. And it's in their jurisdiction. It's in an area where they can get to quickly. And so...
And this was part of Utah. It's now part of Idaho.
Yeah. But
at the time, it was part
of Utah territories. Yeah. And so it was absolutely something that they were willing to do. But Connor, he even said before he left Salt Lake, I have no intentions of going up there to arrest anyone. I'm not serving arrest warrants. I'm not going to deprive my men a little fun of Indian killing. Mm. But that's kind of how the government, the federal government, looked at things. I mean, there was a point there where Indians had bounties on their heads. You could actually get paid to turn in an Indian scalp. And so they were looked at differently. And so they absolutely wanted to go take care of the Indian problem. You know, the problem for that, the saints here were the ones sending the letters saying, come take care of the Indian problem. And I'm going to cut them a little slack here. And I don't know, I take some heat from friends and colleagues about this because I want to give the pioneers that were here the benefit of the doubt. I don't think they had in mind a wholesale massacre of those people. Because in a lot of respects, they were Sagwitch and his people who had a wonderful relationship with most of them. So I don't want to say they thought the army was going to come up here and massacre 450 Shoshone men, women, and children. I think the government in those early years were moving tribes. The Trail of Tears and other tribes were being relocated from one area to, you know, Oklahoma, the Indian territories. And so I just want to believe in my heart of hearts that the saints probably had that in mind. Could you come up here and take care of the problem? But from our perspective, it might be moving the Shoshones somewhere else, at least out of our backyard. We don't want them here anymore.
So the idea, you think, was the Mormons just wanted to move them away so they would put
Stephen. Gone. You've been doing this as a federal government all across the country, and especially back east, all of those eastern tribes were moved to Oklahoma. And so I want to believe that's what they wanted, just the problem to go away. I don't think they envisioned a wholesale massacre. And I don't know, maybe that's the LDS side of me giving them the benefit of the doubt. But when you see the Mountain Meadows Massacre and you see other things that transpired and some of the atrocities that even LDS people can do in the name of religion and the name of manifest destiny. I mean, when you feel like you have a God-given right to be here, you can pretty much do whatever you want to make sure that that's achieved. So, but I don't know. I just feel like, and I guess I take consolation from some of the comments from some of the local saints after the massacre, were horrified by what they saw. But while some were horrified, some of the leadership, including Henry Ballard that was here, said the massacre was an intervention from our Heavenly Father, and the Shoshones were punished without them having to do it. And so
without the Mormons having to do it.
And so you get mixed messages from the locals, most of them horrified, but the leadership saying, well, we tried to show them, we tried to teach them. Peter Mann, in a letter dated February 4th, 1863, to Brigham Young, said, we have tried and tried to teach them our ways, and they've perished relying upon their own strength and wisdom. And so that's the verbiage that goes to Brigham Young, and somehow letting them off the hook. And so while I'm sure some of the saints were horrified by it, there were other leadership position people that were saying this was an act of the Almighty God. And so that's a little more troublesome for me. But I tend to not want to judge people that lived 157 years ago on the morale that I have in my own heart today. We know so much more 157 years later, so I don't think it's really fair or accurate to judge people based on the values that they had then. It was the Wild West. A lot of things took place in the Wild West that we would never sign off on today. But, you know, it is what it is at the end of the day. Those things happened. The saints were responsible. They didn't fire a bullet, but they were absolutely responsible by them being here. The depletion of resources. And so, yeah, it's a sad tale in the history of our state. And me saying that and writing the book and talking about those hard issues, it's okay, because that's, at the end of the day, that's not the message. The message to me is always about a group of people that went through a horrific experience, ended up joining the church, ended up being faithful. In fact, the missionary that converted them, George Washington Hill, said they exhibited a childlike faith that he'd never seen before. They were full tithe payers. They helped build the Logan Temple. And so they were just faithful, and he compared them to the people of Ammon in the Book of Mormon. And so that's just who I'm a product of. I, you know, that those early years, those first Sagwitch and his people used to perform the sun dance, which is a really radical ceremony that a lot of tribes still perform today. And we don't do that anymore, but those early Shoshone Latter-day Saints did. And the funny thing is, the church allowed them to still practice some of that old religion. And just over generations, it slowly, you know, crept out because of, you know, once you start getting, well, I was born in the church and this is what they're teaching me, those other ways, not always for the good, tend to disappear. I wish we still performed ceremonies like that. In fact, I still participate. And on January 2nd, I've been invited by the Eastern Band at Wind River to go up and perform the war bonnet dance. So here's Sagwitch's headdress.
That's the actual headdress?
Yes.
Oh, you're kidding. I didn't realize that. So,
now, it's been repaired a few times, but those are the feathers. So, you know, I wonder if he was wearing that during the massacre. The stories they could tell. But on the January 2nd, I get to go up to the Eastern Band and participate in the War Bonnet Dance. The War Bonnet Dance is performed once a year at the first Saturday in January. And it's the only time that a woman can wear the war bonnet. It's the only time they're allowed. And so the ceremony is the men dance a couple of songs, and then they put a war bonnet on a woman that's across from them. And then the woman dances one song, and then they dance a song together. But the woman is given the war bonnet dance to signify their contribution in protecting the village when the men were away on hunting trips, because they were in charge. They were, if something happened, they dealt with it. And so that's the only time a woman can actually wear the war bonnet. Hmm. So I've never done it before, and I'm really excited to go up and participate again. Wow. Because I think some of those things are just really important that we keep alive.
Definitely. I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Darren Perry, author of The Bear River Massacre. In our next conversation, we're going to visit the first of three memorial sites in southern Idaho and see the first monument that was dedicated to what was known at the time as the Bear River Battle.
This rock collecting campaign started. Some of these rocks are from Nauvoo temple site.
Wow, really?
There's rocks from all over, from when the pioneers came west. And so these rocks had a significant historical reference to the family that submitted them. And so from that, this monument was developed. And the first plaque that you're looking at today, right now, was erected in 1932.
Thanks for listening. If you'd like to hear the entire interview uncut, sign up at patreon.com/gospeltangents, and for $5 a month, you can hear the entire interview without any interruptions. If you'd like to see the whole video, that's just $8 a month, and you can sign up either at youtube.com/gospeltangents or on our website at gospeltangents.com and click the yellow subscribe button. Or you can go to patreon.com/gospeltangents, and I'll just need to make sure that we're Facebook friends, and I'll add you to our insiders group, and you can see the entire interview uncut. If you'd like to get PDF transcripts of our interviews, those are just $10 a month. And for just $15 a month, I will send you paperback versions of our transcripts as soon as they come out. Or, of course, you can buy them on Amazon as well. Go to Amazon.com and do a search for Gospel Tangents Interview, and you can see all of our transcripts there. Don't forget to sign up for our updates at facebook.com/gospeltangents. Of course, you can follow us at Gospel Tangents on Twitter. To hear our interviews updated to your podcast player, go to tinyurl.com/gospeltangents and make sure you give us a 5-star review. And of course, you should show your support for Gospel Tangents with one of these cool t-shirts, like this green one, or light blue, sport gray, royal blue, purple, of course black, beautiful gold, and of course Utah red. I've probably left out some colors, but if you want to see more, go to gospeltangents.com/shop and you can get one of these. So once again, thanks for listening. Click here to subscribe, here for a transcript, and over here we've got some more of our great videos. Thanks again.